Deep Dish has changed a lot. It started out on public access, distributing independent media from community producers, community activists, media makers to public access stations in the U.S. And with, you know, the internet, it's shifted more to distribution on online and on social media sites. So we still do work with local community producers and distribute their work there. And we're getting ready to launch a new video series on January 20th for the anniversary of Trump's inauguration. And it's going to be called We Interrupt This Program, which was a Deep Dish program, also the title of a Deep Dish program back in 1991. And this series is going to be about community responses. We have 10 themes, basically, in response to the Trump regime, to far-right politics, and we're really excited about it. It's a collaboration with Paper Tiger also.
Cool. So what is the organizing principle behind Deep Dish programming in general? Let's say, what is the focus?
I think what's a couple things, but I think what we're telling people, especially with this program, is that mostly the politics, I would say, are very important to Deep Dish, and I would also say to Paper Tiger, because it is independent media, so it, also that it's independent, you know, non-commercial, you know. But I think the politics of both the work of both organizations is probably what's most important. The perspectives that we're coming from. We're not objective. We do have an angle. We're not afraid of the word propaganda, really. And really highlighting the work of local activists. And so we, you know, build relationships with people who are, you know, doing things to confront kind of mainstream narratives. And we also work with people who are misrepresented in the media. So those kind of things have remained the same with Deep Dish, even though the platforms of distribution have changed. We still work with people who are misrepresented or, you know, yeah.
So when I first heard about Deep Dish TV, I was living in New Orleans, and I saw on the wall of our local Media Access Center a poster for one of the first two series that Deep Dish produced. And at the time, the goal was to be an organizer for organizers, activism for activists, to really get people to use the channels, do something with them, and also to provide programming for those channels. So that was back in the days of public access television, when really, public access TV was about the only way that you could get alternative voices out into the television world using cable. But now, you know, almost, 40 years later, things have changed so much. So the need for alternative distribution was so evident back in the 1980s. Do you think there's still a need for it now?
I think absolutely there's a need for it. I think some of the amazing things that have happened with access is that, you know, video cameras, equipment to make things and to get things out there is more accessible. I think that's great. But what's also happened is that there is an overwhelming amount of content. So when you have groups, you know, that have been around for 30 years, kind of like are consistently, you know, showing different perspectives, like, and have this kind of background, you know, like Paper Tiger, Deep Dish, and it's a way that people are, you know, they are, I don't even know how to explain it, sorry, but people trust Deep Dish, and people trust Paper Tiger, you know, and so it's a way that things don't get lost in this kind of sea, right? Because it's easy for that to happen, I think, with this overwhelming amount of content. And so I think that's kind of a benefit of distributing, I guess, with Deep Dish and Paper Tiger and working with, yeah, groups
well,
like that.
Now that you mention it, I guess Deep Dish is a brand that's 40 years old at this point. So there is some advantage to the longevity there.
Yeah, 31. It started in 1986. Yeah, we celebrated our anniversary last year, 30th anniversary.
Wow.
Yeah, Yeah.
Exciting. So I remember at the time back in the 1990s, I worked for a few years with Deep Dish TV, and it was an exciting time to be in New York City, really doing media work then, put you in the middle of all the activism of the day. And at that time, the AIDS epidemic was still very real, and there was just an amazing community outpouring of support for people who got sick because nobody else was doing it, and nobody was talking about it, and there's no information about it. It was amazing to see the role that alternative media could play. And it was also around the time of the first Gulf War, and the coalescing of the anti-war movement together with other movements, and the use of media to get the message out was really extraordinary. It was a pivotal time in my life, and really I remember very fondly all the people I met there and all the great work they were doing. What is the is there an equivalent now? What's the excitement in New York City in the media world?
So in New York City, I guess a lot of the activist groups that have popped up, like even some of the anarchist groups, like MAC, the Metropolitan Anarchist Coordinating Council, is a really exciting and new group. Woodbine also, who I'm going to see a friend with later. They have a creative component. They do a lot of things really. I think also there is still a need and for public access, and it is still a valuable resource. So BRIC out in Brooklyn, they do a lot of amazing work with the people in Brooklyn community, MNN. And something that you said earlier about like it being it really is a tool, media, and working with activists, media groups. It's like we use this media as a tool also for organizing. So, with what's going on right now, like on social media and Facebook, it's just like you're inundated with all of this like bad, stuff that's going on. And it really is. But also, there is a lot of organizing and like building and movement work. And to really show that, I think, is also important and something that I'm excited about with the new series. So and really, yeah, to have this as a tool for and to show what's going on, because you don't hear about it. Like, you might hear about it on this station, you might hear about it on public access, maybe some, but mainstream channels won't air that, They want the Trump TV, fiasco, kind of, because their ratings will improve their ratings, but we don't care about that stuff, so.
So you mentioned it kind of makes me jealous when you talk about MNN, which is Manhattan Neighborhood Network, the public access TV organization in Manhattan. And then BRIC TV is the public access organization in Brooklyn, which has so much other stuff going on. Also, Queens Public Access everywhere, and just an exciting community of producers around the access stations. Mm-hmm. Up here, there's really almost nothing. There's no access in Troy. There's limited access in Albany, terribly underfunded. Nothing really similar to that. And it's a shame, I think, if people could see. And it's kind of people don't take it seriously. I think there's a Wayne's World view of what access is. But if you went to New York City, you'd see what it could be, how really people who have no other access to communications media really can get their hands around it and also meet other producers and be creative at the same time.
Well, I think the Sanctuary, this is the first time I visited, but it does remind me a lot of a public access station. And, there are workshops here and tutorials and like teachings, and, you have a radio station, and these are really amazing things that, you are providing access to the community. So I think that's great.
Well, inspired by a lot of great work that people other places have done, the problem that we have in the region is that there's no funding for it. And mm-hmm. So where normally you would get funding from a portion of the profits that the cable industry makes from using public rights of way, that's what funds access in other communities. Here, it mostly goes to the general fund of the cities, and so there's no investment in media infrastructure. Who are the kinds of folks who you collaborate with outside of New York City? It's an amazing network that Deep Dish has put in place over 30 years. What other kinds of groups are there that you're working with?
Well, for the new series, we're working, one group is Submedia. They're Canadian. and they have different video series right now. If you check them out, it's sub.media. I love their work. And another group is Global Uprisings. Deep Dish is a fiscal sponsor of them. It's Brandon, Jordan, and Marianne Mackelberg. And they've been documenting responses to austerity and economic crisis around the world since probably, I guess, about 2011. So they both, I would say both of those are people that we collaborate with. And they're really international because Global Uprisings, they live mostly in Amsterdam, but they also travel a lot in different places.
And are you still collaborating with public access organizations around the country?
Yeah, Deep Dish still has biweekly episodes on MNN. And I believe Paper Tiger has a slot at Brick. There is also a battle going on right now. Didi is in a legal battle with Manhattan Neighborhood Network because they've kind of, well, you can research a little bit more about that, but there's a video actually that she made kind of, you know, talking about how MNN is doing things kind of on a commercial basis, and they're not really supposed to do that. You know, it's supposed to be for the public and for public access, and you know, things like booking out rooms, you know, or studio spaces, and not allowing basically that time for the community. And so you should check out the video.
So that's Dee Dee Hallock, who's the revered / notorious public access pioneer in New York City. So how did you get into this? What brought you into Deep Dish TV, and in particular in the media world in general?
Well, I was a student at NYU interested in documentary, and I took a class with George Stoney. And I took as many classes with George that I possibly could, and also Judith Halfan. And that's where I learned about Paper Tiger and also Dee Dee Hallock. And I saw, you know, Dee Dee's work in George's class. And then after I graduated, I got this email about an open house with Paper Tiger. And they just seemed like a really fun group of media makers. And I was interested. And so I went to this open house. And so first I was a collective member of Paper Tiger. I got certified at MNN. We did a few studio shows there. I did camera work for them. And this was back in maybe 2008, 2009. And then I met Brian Drolet and Dee Dee at a meeting at MNN where they were talking about bringing back community grants because they had taken away the grants for community organizations. So I met Brian, and he was going out of town. I mean, it's kind of funny, but he was going out of town in the summertime, and he's like, "How would you like to work at Deep Dish?" And at the time, I was like freelancing, kind of between jobs, and so I said, "Okay." And I had no I didn't know what it was going to be like, and I'm here 5 years later. So
cool. And for people who want to find out more about, you've really been listing the who's who of the alternative media community in New York City. But if people wanted to find out more about Paper Tiger, is there a website they can be found?
Yep. They can go to papertiger.org. Also on Facebook, contact us either of those places. There's also, we have meetings every other Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the office.
And that's in New York City?
In New York City, yep. In Chinatown is where the office is. It's an open collective, so, you know, we're always looking for new members. And Deep Dish, if you want to check out, is deepdishtv.org.